the third thing I want to do today, we've talked about introductory issues. We've talked about whether the prologue and epilogue belong. The third thing is we want to talk about the nature of the satanic test that Satan launches against Job. Now, as you know, the book begins with introducing Job, and Job is this righteous man with this great wealth in cattle and other possessions. He has 7 sons and 3 daughters, and his sons and daughters are so wealthy that they spend all their time partying at each other's houses, and Job always prays for them, and every time they're done partying, he makes sure, as it were, they go to confession, and then he goes to extra masses on each of their behalf in case they've done some sin. Of course, I'm exaggerating, I'm being anachronistic here, but basically what he's doing is he offers reparation for his children by offering sacrifice. And so he's this very pious man who's not only godly himself, but he does extra sacrifices and extra mortifications even for his kids in case they've committed any secret sins. So Job is introduced, so he's wealthy and he's godly. That's the big point. Then the scene switches to the heavenly court, and the angels are parading past God and giving reports about what they've been doing on the earth. And Satan comes before God, and God says, "What have you been up to, Satan?" Satan says, "I've been wandering around the earth." And God says, "Have you noticed my servant Job? You know, he's a good guy, righteous, and he never sins." And Satan says, "Well, does Job serve you for nothing? Because you've put a hedge around him and protected him from all evil. And if you take away your protection from him and allow bad things to happen to him, he'll turn around and he'll stop loving you and he'll curse you to your face." And so God says, "All right, go ahead and test him." So Satan goes down and he tests Job by taking away all Job's possessions and all his children. And so Job's left destitute. All these disasters happen to him. And he does not curse God. And he does not turn his back on God. So some time passes and Satan goes back up into the heavenly court, as it were, some time later. And God says, "Hey, Satan, have you seen my servant Job? You did all those bad things to him, and still, he's been faithful to me." And Job says, "Well, but you didn't let me touch his body. If you let me put him under some physical pain, he'll turn around and curse you." So God says, "All right, go ahead and test him." So Satan goes down, and he afflicts Job with a skin disease. And so Job has all these unsightly sores on his body, and now he's really pitiful. So he sits in an ash heap, and he scrapes the sores with a piece of pottery, and he's just in utter misery. But he still doesn't curse God, and he still doesn't give up on God. So that's the test. And then there's all these dialogues, and then God shows up at the end and talks to Job, and then we get past that, and then God restores Job's fortunes. So that's the plot of the book. Now, this satanic test, what is at stake here? Okay, what's at stake in the satanic test is, first of all, Job's integrity. Okay, Satan suggests to God, and in fact to the entire heavenly court, that Job's only motivation is what he can get out of this relationship. So he's basically saying, Job doesn't love you, God, for yourself. He just loves you for the things that you give him. Okay, so he's in it for what he can get. He'll serve you as long as he can get stuff from you. Okay, it's not genuine love. It's not genuine faithfulness. He doesn't love you for you. He just loves you for the stuff. Okay, so Satan is suggesting that Job is not genuine in his love for God. But, and this is frequently overlooked, in a backhanded sort of way, this also calls into question God's inherent desirability or God's lovability. Because when Satan says, "Job only loves you for what he can get out of you, God," Satan is suggesting, "God, you aren't lovable unless you give people things." In other words, God, you would not have any friends if you didn't buy them. That's what Satan is saying to the Almighty. You see, you understand? This would be like you going to a wealthy friend and saying, you know, "Hey, Bill, you know, your parents are really wealthy and you got, you know, these lavish parties and you give these lavish gifts and stuff. Hey, Bill, do you realize that none of your friends really like you? They only pretend to be your friends because of the gifts you give them?" Now, what does that say? First of all, it suggests that all Bill's friends have ulterior motives in their friendship. And it secondly suggests that Bill is a pretty unlovable guy, that nobody loves Bill just for Bill. People only like Bill because Bill gives them things. Okay? So the satanic test is really it really calls into question Job's integrity, and it calls into question God's character as well. So in a way, both God and Job are being tested. God's lovability is put to the test. God, are you worthy of faithfulness? Are you worthy of love just for yourself and not for the things that you do for people? And Job, will you love God even when you don't get anything from God? So both parties in the relationship are under test. Satan is calling into question the entire integrity of the divine human covenant. Okay? As I have down on the outline, the book becomes a fight for the vindication of the divine human covenant, for the integrity of the love relationship between God and man. And so it's up to Job, primarily to him, but in a sense also to God, to prove to Satan and to the whole cosmos that God and man can be in a loving relationship with one another apart from any giving or receiving material benefits. And actually, God and Job prove that, because at the end of the book, Job says to God, I have seen you with the seeing of the eye, and therefore I repent in dust and ashes. In other words, Job's last comment in the book is, God, I'm satisfied just with seeing you, and I drop all my other accusations, all my other challenges, and so on. Seeing you is enough. But then, God doesn't, even though that's enough for Job, God doesn't just let it stand there. He ends up restoring Job's fortunes as well, because God is, after all, is a loving and generous God. So the restoration of Job's fortunes at the end of the book is a type or sign of the resurrection. We know that not everybody has their fortunes restored in this life, and many people die martyrs. But we also know that for those people, the reward that they receive from God is delayed to the life that is to come.